Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everyone, and welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. We are going to talk NXT for December 23rd, 2020. Another very busy show, because that's what we get now. And it seems like a lot of talking points, so we will do with them what we can and try to get in and out of here under an hour and a half. I think that's a pipe dream. But anything's possible. So we normally start with our main event. We will do that this time, even though our main event wasn't a match with a lot of sizzle. So here's the deal. Main event is Adam Cole versus Velveteen Dream. And Velveteen Dream is just nowhere on the show right now. There's no sizzle on this. It's actually kind of hard to watch Velveteen Dream be just another guy, even knowing that this is a problem of his own making, and the response to him by fans has been pretty negative. So they don't want Dream to be in a position where he has to promote feuds, multi-week feuds, or anything like that. So it seems like he's almost not even figured in. So the best case scenario was a night like tonight, where he's in a feud, but it's only a feud that runs the length of the show. He gets into the feud in the first hour and pays it off at the end of the overrun. So, and then on top of that, you just don't think Velveteen Dream has any chance to win. He got very little offense in this, as has been the case in almost all of the losses he's taken since his, I don't want to say return to TV, because it seems like he keeps being gone for a few weeks at a time, even though I'd have to look into that to see what the real numbers are. But anyway, your main event is Adam Cole versus Velveteen Dream, a match that totally lives in a vacuum. And if it hadn't existed, it would not have detracted anything from this show or from future TV, because it was just there. 13 minutes, 18 seconds. Cole goes over Dream. Tom Staupe, who are you and what the hell did you think?
Thank you. Yes, at Tom Staupe on Twitter. Yeah, I guess Velveteen Dream must have been in another car crash, right? That's why he was gone for a while. So they do the overrun deliberately to cut into people tuning over to the late starting AEW, but they do it on a week when, as you said, the match has no sizzle and the finish is not in question at all. The most intrigue, and I use that word very loosely here, was Pete Dunne coming down to attack Roderick Strong at ringside. So I guess we're going to get a TV match between the two of them coming up. Cool. That should fill some minutes. But my only real takeaway is I'm glad Adam Cole still exists. He's got so much star power, and it's become more rare to see him on TV ever since the Pat McAfee feud back at Triple X. So obviously I'm an advocate for keeping people special, and we've talked about that a lot, but Cole has felt very geared down.
Yeah, I actually thought I like the whole pay-to-play concept. I've said that a lot, but it seems like he's a little cold right now. And I don't know if it did him any favors to beat someone who was ice cold. It's just like he got the last moment doing the UE hand signal in the camera. And yes, I did it when I said it aloud. I couldn't help myself. I just did it. But he... It just didn't seem like there was anything. It was so weird to see this main event event in a vacuum. Nate, who are you?
I am at Nate Lindberg on Twitter, and I do the NXT hits and misses, which I did write up for tonight. And for the most part, everything was a hit, including this match. I did actually give it a hit because now I know what I totally hear what you're saying. In a vacuum, you know, that this match existed, really no storyline, anything like that. The only real story thing was like Tom said, Pete Dunne's interference and whatever, you know, taking Roderick Strong out. That's really the only thing that kind of went in here. The way that I took this, and this is just me, but if I kind of took this as giving the fans something to go home happy with at the end of 2020, you know, 2020 was kind of a crazy year, if you guys weren't aware. And, you know, if you look at it about a year ago, we would not have ever thought Velveteen Dream would be in the position that he's in, right? Well, back at the end of last year, would we ever have thought this is how this year went? So for me, I kind of just took that as Velveteen Dream is everything about 2020 wrapped up in a bubble here, and Adam Cole's going to vanquish it to send the fans home happy. That's just kind of like the way I was looking at this year, because, yeah, I couldn't really make any sense for it in my head otherwise. You know, Velveteen Dream hasn't been part of the show. He's been gone for, I mean, God, yeah, like I'd have to check exactly how long it's been myself, but I mean, it feels like it's been at least a couple months. So, you know, I don't know. It was nice to see Adam Cole get the win. Nice to see an Adam Cole match. You know, and I mean, Dream, for, you know, putting my hatred and of Patrick Clark and all of that stuff aside, you know, I got to admit, I mean, he does have some talent. So it was still an entertaining match to watch, but it kind of really didn't need to exist other than to kind of give Adam Cole a win and like I said, kind of send the fans home happy.
You want to talk about matches that don't need to exist. Tom and I earlier today recorded NXT 8 years back, and the one match on an otherwise recap show of the year in review of NXT is Kane versus Cody Rhodes. Two total main roster guys. It made no sense that it was on, but we had some fun with that and a lot of other things. Yes, this is just a plug for NXT 8 years back. Do you want to call us and talk to us on this show? Do it. We dare you. 515-605-9345 and ask us what you like about the show. Let us know what you thought. We are going to do that right now. This is our friend Darrell, and Darrell, let us know what you saw that you liked, hated, anything on this show this week.
Okay, it was a couple of nice things that was on the show tonight. I can't lie. First thing that I would like to talk to you guys about, I know that we were talking about Rhea Ripley and what they were doing with her, but it looked like they were building up Raquel Gonzalez for a big match between her and Rhea Ripley again. And they're using and we're gonna get Toni Storm versus Io. How do you guys like the matchup, and how do you guys like how everything's going with that?
So yeah, the women have a lot going on right now, as they should, because what a division. And the division got better tonight in a way that we will talk about a little later. So, yes, Rhea Ripley goes over to Dakota Kai in 11 minutes and 30 seconds in your mid-show main event. Good stuff there. Lots of fun counters. I think these two match up very well in a monster versus underdog. Heel underdog doesn't always work. These two make it work, and I really dug this match. I'm bummed that Dakota Kai is the fall girl for Raquel Gonzalez, but if they're going to do monster versus monster, which I'm in favor of from a business standpoint and a division standpoint, and keeping Ripley hot while she's not in that main event scene, that works for me. Raquel was banned from ringside here. Ripley does beat Kai with the Riptide after Kai once fights it off and tries to reverse it to something else, but can't do it the second time. Ripley over Kai. So we've got that. It's interesting because we thought out of the ashes of War Games that Raquel Gonzalez might get a match with Io Shirai fairly soon, because it was Io Shirai who ate the pin in that match. But if it's not going to be Raquel and Io, then why do it at all? Although that might be a bit of long-term storytelling for the next takeover, assuming that Raquel survives this, what is going to be a last woman standing match. And we know it's going to be last woman standing because our host for New Year's Evil is Dexter Lumis. And he drew a photo, drew a picture of these two behemoths and put last woman standing on it. Io Shirai, for her part, seemingly has a feud with Mercedes Martinez also, because Io was cutting a promo on Toni Storm, who had cut a promo on her earlier, and Mercedes Martinez jumps Io Shirai. Mercedes returning to NXT after the scare where we thought that she was going to be in Retribution, but that did not happen. So women's division alive and very much well, Tom.
Yeah, Io has been a fairly passive champion when it comes to who's going to challenge her. That's not to say I haven't enjoyed her reign. She's just been passive. So I enjoyed her responding to Tony this way. And just like everybody else, I certainly did not expect to see Mercedes Martinez here. And with the new hair color and not being able to see her face right away, when she went in and put whatever hold it was on, like a half Nelson or whatever that was on Io, right away I was like, ooh, that looks familiar. I know this person. And then we see her face. And and this was also the most buzzed about segment on in my social media circles anyway. So lots of people definitely happy Mercedes is back. Typical NXT muddying the waters of the women's title picture when it seems so crystal clear as to where it's going, which is absolutely Tony as a speed bump, then heading to Raquel. And I had it, yeah, like many other people, I had it the other way around, with Raquel challenging first and being the speed bump. And then I would have had Tony going over. Raquel is she's improved leaps and bounds. I don't think she is women's championship material, but the position that she's in when she's going to go over Rhea at New Year's Evil in what I am disappointed is a last woman standing match, because I really feel like these ladies could have a great straight match one another if given a lot of time, and we don't need the stipulation added to it, but they're just trying to appeal to viewers on Wednesday nights. So, okay. This puts Raquel in a much more favorable position. We'll see how things play out, but I think she'll be strong heading into TakeOver against Io. That's where I think it's going to go. And yeah, the match with Dakota was clearly just an easy way to put Rhea back in the winning column after she's done the favors a couple times. And yes, of course, I am sad that is how I am speaking about Dakota Kai, but that's where she is. And because that's where she is, and she is a relatively easy win for Rhea Ripley, I like that Rhea has started to work in very, very confident gestures. She has a great demeanor about her, almost Hogan-esque. Like, she's got Dakota in, I believe it was the Prism Lock, which was not called the Prism Lock tonight, but whatever. And Dakota was trying to get out, and Rhea just lifts the finger and wags it like, that's not happening. So I like that Rhea is incorporating that stuff when she's in a match that you know that she's going to win. Just as a fun little aside, when the producers ran in for the pull apart brawl afterwards, which wasn't the best pull apart brawl I've ever seen, but whatever, they got there. Of the producers, many of them we've seen on TV before. I cannot remember seeing Scotty Tuhati on TV before. Obviously he's wrestled on NXT as Scotty Tuhati, years and years ago, but I don't think we've seen him in this producer role. So that was a little bit of a fun Where's Waldo.
It was indeed, and we've seen Where's Waldo on the show too. So there you go.
It's true.
So lots of guys coming back. I actually missed Scotty because during the pull apart brawl, I was writing all the stuff that was happening, and didn't realize that Scotty had popped up on TV. So there you go, Scott Taylor back in the mix on television. Nate on the women.
That was a cool little cameo when Too Cool came in at NXT for that little run there. But anyway, that aside, I enjoyed this overall. Now Storm, we've talked about it. She's not my favorite. She's not your favorite. She's not Tom's favorite. But I think she does have an appeal. She does have an upside, and I think she is going to be, is going to probably be a star, make a name for herself anyway, within NXT, potentially main roster. So I'm cool with the feud. I liked Io kind of storming out to the ring, trying to throw the chair in the ring. I had to laugh at that. Just trying to angrily throw the chair in the ring, and he got caught in the ropes. But she worked it. She worked it. She made it work. But I thought that was great. Just kind of get in the ring and then do like the Timothy Thatcher, Tommaso Ciampa thing. Just sit down in the chair and call out, call Storm out. I was not expecting Mercedes Martinez to come out and take her, to kind of get involved whatsoever. I mean, I hadn't really even been thinking about Mercedes Martinez after the rumors about her going to Retribution. I know obviously she didn't show up in Retribution, but after that, she just kind of fell off the radar. And I was really happy to finally see that's who it was that was behind the attack. Kind of see her back on TV. We've talked about it before. She's clearly. She's clearly a ring veteran herself, just new to the brand, new to WWE environment. But I'm really excited to see her here in NXT and kind of see what they're going to do with her. If they're going to align her with, Toni Storm or something like that. I hope not. But, because the last time we saw her, they were kind of thinking about, is she going to join the Robert Stone brand? Is she not going to join the Robert Stone brand? And kind of go back and forth. I don't necessarily want to see her with anybody. I think she should stand on her own, and kind of almost be like that, almost like a female Brock Lesnar, I guess, in a way, like NXT's female Brock Lesnar, just kind of like come in, kick ass, leave. I think that would be a great role for her, but yeah, so really, really glad to see her. And then, as far as Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez here, a few months back, I don't think I would have thought that this was the role that either woman would have been in. I would have thought it would have kind of been reversed. And that's not a knock on Raquel Gonzalez, not a knock on Dakota Kai, but just the way that they were framing everything back then, made me kind of think that, that's the way things are going. Obviously things change, things happen, storylines progress, and they're going with, the monster versus the monster right now. So, Dakota Kai played a role perfectly tonight. I think kind of taking the loss to build up to Raquel Gonzalez versus Rhea Ripley New Year's Evil, and I'm personally looking forward to it. I think it should be a fun, entertaining match if their prior matches are anything to go off of.
And just to be that guy, Mercedes Martinez did make a couple appearances with Retribution. She didn't have her name announced, but it reportedly was going to be Retaliation. And she wore basically the same mask that Mia Yim is wearing as Reckoning. And then Mercedes was like, this sucks. Can I go back to NXT, please?
Okay. Well,
hey, that guy.
There you go. We got
consider
two emails.
Lucky to have missed it.
Yeah, we got two emails on the women. David Podnar says, I was not expecting news to be made tonight, but I am so excited for Mercedes Martinez to be back. The women's division got stronger, and hopefully the training group even better. 2021 prediction, her matches will be great. From Dave Podner, the safest of all bets right there, because they definitely will. And JB also emailed us, and you can do that too at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. JB from Detroit says, I just wanted to comment on last week's conversation on Toni Storm's character and whether it's bland or not. The most apt comparison I can make to Toni is Sasha Banks' boss character, particularly in NXT. The sunglasses and rock star-like entrance and attitude is relatively similar in my opinion. However, I think that Toni's character naturally gravitates towards being a babyface while Sasha's naturally gravitates towards being a heel, making both wrestlers out of place in their current roles. I also think we might be overlooking a certain it factor that Toni brings to the table. I agree that she isn't the best technical wrestler or the best promo, but I believe that she oozes a certain charisma and certainly has the look to be a star. I think if put in the right circumstances, that Toni is more than capable of being an adequate NXT Women's Champion, and even beyond that. As always, love the show, and go VIP. Yeah, we could argue a lot about the level of her it factor, but I think that the look is there, and I think that she is somebody worth taking a chance on, and I don't say that about just anybody. And yeah, I guess I definitely agree with she and Sasha being a little bit miscast, but Sasha right now makes it work a little bit more when she's playing against type. For me, that is true. Anyway, so I'll let the guys talk about that if they want to, but first let me throw back to Darrell and see what his next thing is for us. Oh, I just accidentally muted him. What the heck's wrong with me? Darrell, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. And I purposely didn't mention Mercedes Martinez because I hope that they do have her face her maybe at New Year's Evil at an extra match. And then she has to go through Toni Storm, then Raquel Gonzalez. My thinking is, and I'm going to put this to you guys, because I see her coming over probably within February or something like that, Kay Lee Ray being the one to defeat Io Shirai, just to make a new star here and stuff like that. So that's somebody who I see coming over and doing that. But, okay, my second question for you guys, we had an amazing video between Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor touching on the last match and everything and what they're going to do this next match. And the build-up seems quite good on that. How do you guys like that and everything about that?
Was my favorite segment of the show, and I found plenty to like in this show, but I loved this, and I'm surprised that I can't immediately think of another time on the weekly show where they did something like this. They had Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly sitting watching their previous match, not in the same place, not at the same time, but talking about the match and what it did to them. Finn being upset that he did win, but he seemed like people were only talking about the fact that Kyle destroyed his jaw. O'Reilly saying, "This right here, what I'm watching, is the moment where I realized that the hope was lost, and it pisses me off just to watch it." A lot of respect between Balor and O'Reilly, both playing faces, but badass faces. And taking in that match and giving weight to the rematch that will happen in a couple of weeks. I thought this was extremely effective and really, really dug this as a conceit, not something that you can do every time because you're not always going back to a match that was an instant classic. But if you're going back to a match that was this good, I absolutely love this as an idea, Nate.
Sorry, actually throw to Tom real quick. I'm having trouble with my mic.
Can do. Tom, go for it.
Well, I concur with your enthusiasm for it and your reasoning for that enthusiasm. And I would add that because they framed this the way they did by looking at specific spots in the much talked about match and providing their own commentary on it, it absolutely succeeds in creating intrigue around their next clash at New Year's Evil, because we aren't just going to be watching it like we watch any other match now. We're going to be looking for specific spots. So this doesn't feel just like, you know, part two of any given rivalry. This feels like there's going to be more strategy and more psychology going into every movement these guys make in the ring. So I think that just framing it this way already makes that match much more exciting to watch than it was. And it is something I'm looking forward to all the more. So big success there. And Sasha and Tony is actually a good comparison from JB, maybe for different reasons, just because they are two people that I look at and see so many, you know, throngs of people referring to them as the best wrestlers on the planet. And I'm like, I've liked the boss character and Sasha has had her high points. She belongs in the Four Horsewomen, as she's not the odd woman out by any means. Tony, I've said my piece on a number of times, but are you sure we're looking at the same people here, buddy? Because best wrestler on the planet, they're not even in the same school. So it's the kind of thing that I feel like I'm very capable of viewing a lot of things objectively. And these are two wrestlers where I have a hard time doing that because I see them showered with so much praise and I'm like, I just don't see it. And I have been very optimistic about the Toni Storm heel turn. And I'm not sure if it's just that we haven't seen enough of it yet. So far, she has not been proving me right in that optimism. It has not been that much of a change to her act. She's just working on a different side of the ledger. Still comes off as very disingenuous, I feel. So hopefully she does prove me wrong. Sasha, I think, still has it in her to be the boss of 2015, I want to say, whatever the first takeover Brooklyn was. Yeah, 15, I think. But she certainly has been a far cry from that of late. So, yeah, I guess a good comparison for different reasons.
Nate, if you are good on the whole microphone thing, take it away.
Yeah, no, finally, I am. Sorry about that. I got a wireless mic, and the battery was giving me some problems. But anyway, enough about my headset. So I really only have any something to add on the Tony-Sasha thing, just kind of in the interest of time, really. But, you know, I really kind of agree with Tom here. I've been really optimistic with Toni Storm. You know, I said it just a few minutes ago, you know, that I feel like she does have, you know, have an upside here. But at the same time, I also don't feel like she's stepping up to that, you know, kind of stepping up to that particular role for what I think they're kind of looking for her to step into. You know, the heel character, I've been hopeful that she's been able to kind of, you know, roll with it and kind of grow into it. But I'm not necessarily 100% buying it. It's not necessarily something that, you know, I'm investing in 100%, you know, in somebody that I think is going to end up becoming like NXT Women's Champion or something like that. I don't know what it is necessarily that she's missing, whether it's a little more attitude or something like that. But there's just something. There's something that is missing that I feel like, if she was able to figure out what that is and add, you know, 'cause I know obviously her wrestling, she's not the greatest wrestler in the world. We've talked about it. She's not the worst wrestler in the world either. But I think that there's something that she could probably add to her character, especially when she's talking, that, might make it a little bit more believable. So, that's just my two cents anyway.
All right, Darrell, go ahead and hit us with the next one.
Okay. Now, with everything that we've seen today, it was quite interesting. I like the Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher little segment and everything. I like that Tommaso Ciampa didn't come out there all in none of the match. He came out there after the match and stuff like that. I'm liking how they're progressing everything with this rivalry or whatever you want to call it. How do you guys like everything that happened?
So what's so weird about the way that they're promoting Timothy Thatcher is he's essentially getting a high profile match, a fight pit match when he never wins. Like he never. Okay, so he had some comments on Ciampa, cut a promo on him. Pretty good stuff, I thought. And then challenge, he said, tonight I'm going to stretch out Leon Ruff or whatever it was he said. And Ciampa, if you're the man I think you are, you'll come out and you'll stop me. So he had a couple of moments. This was setting up the way he was going to lose to Leon Ruff because he had a couple of moments where he could have done Leon Ruff in. Held him up for what was maybe going to be a scoop slam or some such, but Ruff rolled him up, and he pinned him. Leon Ruff goes over Timothy Thatcher in 3:57 in a match where Thatcher got the lion's share of the offense, and Ruff got just enough. And this actually succeeded in promoting two feuds because Thatcher continues to go after Ruff afterwards, and then Tommaso Ciampa makes the save and takes down Thatcher and said, you want to fight? You have got it. I will see you in the fight pit. Given that the first fight pit match, Timothy Thatcher versus Matt Riddle, was so good, I can only hope that this one will be able to lace its boots. And I have high hopes for this, and it'll be interesting to see where this is placed on the card. Given the stacked nature of the show, wouldn't be surprised if it opens. But anyway, Thatcher goes over Ruff, or Ruff goes over Thatcher. So Ruff also out of this gets himself a rematch for the North American Championship, but I believe that one is next week and not 2 weeks from now on New Year's Evil. So lots of moving parts here, Nate.
Lots of moving parts indeed. I'm glad to see him get a rematch for the title, see Ruff get a rematch for the title, because, you know, it was kind of a crazy, wacky run. And, you know, we've talked about it in the past. Like, I like seeing lengthy title runs. I don't like to see just little comedic title runs. But there's something about Leon Ruff that I liked. I know he kind of, he didn't really shine a whole heck of a lot. I think it was last week. He kind of showed his greenness a little bit, but there's just something about him I like, and I'm on board with it. I'm on board with him getting the rematch. I'm hoping that he gets a legit rematch, and it's not like, you know, some interference or something along those lines. That is what it is there. Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa, that I'm really looking forward to in a fight pit. So, like you said, Riddle versus Thatcher was an incredible match. I think it could arguably be match of the year for NXT, as far as I'm concerned anyway. At least a contender. It should certainly be in the conversation for it, if not match of the year. I'm really looking forward to seeing what these guys could do. When they faced each other at TakeOver, I don't know if you were on the podcast or not yet, if you joined the show or not, but one of the things that I talked about during that show was when I first started Thatcher and Ciampa, I was not into it at all. I really didn't like the match because I was expecting it to be a little bit more of a slugfest, a little bit more of a brawl, and I shouldn't have. There's no reason I should have had that thought going into that match. That's not the story that they were telling, and I had that realization about, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes into the match. So I started it over and I started to watch that match through the lens of, okay, this is supposed to be, you know, catch wrestling, supposed to be submissions and who's the better technical wrestler. But watching it through that lens, they put on a hell of a match. So I'm hoping that they can take elements of that with some elements of the brawling and the quote brutal nature of the fight pit, you know, because it's kind of like NXT's answer to an MMA cage is the fight pit in a way. Supposed to be this brutal structure or whatever. So take elements of their match at TakeOver with a little bit more, you know, striking and brawling and using the fight pit and the environment and all of that. I'm hoping that they can really draw a good match out of this. I've got high hopes for it. I've been hoping that we were going to see another fight pit match. We've talked about it a few times because, you know, so far it just seemed like it was a one-off, but I'm really glad to see it back. Whether it's going to be like, you know, Timothy Thatcher's match or not, you know, kind of like Hell in the Cell was associated with Undertaker or Buried Alive match associated with Undertaker or whatever, you know, for a long time. I don't know if this is going to be his thing or whatever, but so far I'm okay with it. It is weird that he's kind of getting these high profile spots and continuing to lose just about, I think if not every match he's been in, at least every high profile match he's been in, he's lost. But even though he's lost, there's still something about Thatcher that still screams badass to me. Like, even though he's lost, like he hasn't lost his shine yet for me. Maybe as to some people, but not for me anyway. So I don't know. I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful, and I'm crossing my fingers going into this match, going into this fight pit, because I think it should be good.
Yeah, I don't know how they're doing it, but I still care about him deeply despite all of the losses. I have no idea how they're pulling it off. I also feel silly that I didn't know that we were working toward the fight pit. I have historically almost always known when they were working towards a stipulation match because they have little hints along the way that we're headed that way. And not only are they continually saying the word fight, but it's a Thatcher match. So whatever, I missed it, but here we are, Tom.
Yeah, we've definitely been waiting for another fight pit match. I'm excited that there's going to be another fight pit match. I am glad that they've announced it this far in advance so we can anticipate it. That's been an issue with some matches. I mean, maybe I shouldn't focus on that too much because I'm presuming this is indeed New Year's Evil. Obviously, they want to announce stuff in advance. That's more of a complaint for what we got in our opening match tonight and other things that we've seen in recent weeks. But Yeah, I would also expect it to open the show, if only for the logistics of giving them time to set up the cage before the event and then just break it down and move it out of the way and not have to worry about setting it up during a commercial break or something, unless they find some miraculous way to have it, you know, come down from the ceiling like War Games. I don't think they would set something up for just one match on a TV show, but what do I know? I do know that I was really liking this. I liked the framing of it. I even thought that it was appropriate for Ruff to get a comeback in there. And when I say the framing of it, I mean Ciampa not taking the bait and Thatcher working the match on top and constantly looking and inviting Ciampa down. And I thought that that this, again, I don't want to complain too much because they announced this ahead of time and they're letting us anticipate it, and it will be very good. There's almost no way that this could be a disappointing match. But I did feel that this was 2 weeks worth of television in one, as NXT so often gives us, if not 3 weeks of television in one, because I felt that Ciampa standing up Timothy Thatcher for their little ringside chair date was enough of a story beat. And even with the invitation to come out and save Ruff, Ciampa isn't that kind of character to come out and make the save. But we got Ciampa coming out to make the save because of the post-match beatdown, which, you know, the key issue here is that Thatcher's opponent is someone that they still want to do business with. So they gave him that that roll-up victory, which is really unfortunate to see Thatcher taking, especially on the way to a match where, I mean, they got away with it at the last takeover because he did the chop to the throat or whatever it was, that first move that he did to the throat, and he kept working the throat to even the odds with Ciampa, and they'll probably get away with it here just by commentary saying that the fight pit is his element. But we're basically looking at a perpetual loser who will just magically be formidable again because it's a bigger show. So that is unfortunate, but I guess that covers it. I liked so much of the framing and definitely have problems with the way they ended up getting there because of the fact that they wanted to give Ruff the win. Oh, and for Ruff himself, since we're covering that too, I expect that the way we'll beat down Leon Ruff to finish that segment and Kushida will come in for the win, thereby reinserting himself officially in the North American title picture.
Yeah, just insert Kushida to the show, please, again. I really don't want to see him disappear again mid-push. All right. Darrell, do you have one more?
Okay, yes, I do. And he's about two different characters. I'm loving what they're doing with Tyler Rush. I'm liking how he built, how Michael Bivens had him building up his confidence during the match and after the match. I like everything about it. I know you guys and everybody else and me too also speak about Isaiah Scott and the turn or slow turn or whatever they're doing with him, and they're changing the gear up and you're seeing the slow turn to all that. I'm intrigued on what they're doing that because I feel like once a babyface loses three times in a row on the go, you can no longer be a babyface anymore. So I'm liking the turn. I'm understanding the turn. And these are two characters going in two separate ways. And it looks like Michael Bivens is not making Tyler Rush into a heel character. He's being the manager, and I assume he'll eventually turn heel or whatever, so heel tendency. But he just went in the match. He worked that match as a heel. So those two different characters with two different things. How did you guys like that?
All right. Well, thank you as always, Darrell, for the call. Yeah, a couple of things here. Swerve goes over Atlas in the second match of the night. 10 minutes and 29 seconds. Swerve gets his win back there over Jake Atlas, and Swerve worked pretty well heel here, if not, somewhat in the match, but especially somewhat in his offense, but especially in terms of his character work, and lots of cocky stuff here, extending the hand to Atlas afterwards, but still doing it in just this really narcissistic way, and Atlas not having it, and rolling outside of the ring there, and taking off. So So I assume we get a rubber match, but interesting. Yeah, with Swerve, it's like I feel like not having him face is a missed opportunity. But you're right. When a face is going after a goal and they lose repeatedly, it is really hard for them creatively to keep him there. And I don't know what else you do with Swerve right now if you feel like the North American Championship picture is crowded. As for America's best human, that being Tyler Rust, very excited about what they're doing here. He and Malcolm Bivens here first with their interview segment right before the Atlas Swerve match. Bivens says diamond in the rust, and he says it kind of in a knowing way, a wink, wink way a little bit, which I didn't mind. And then Rust puts his fist out for the fist bump. Bivens kind of with a little trepidation hits the fist bump because last week Rust hit the fist bump so hard, or maybe 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. Maybe it was last week that he hurt Bivens. So yeah, a little nice touch there. And then the match later on, I don't know who I thought Tyler Rust was going to face, but it wasn't Arya Daivari. Anyway, he goes over Daivari in 4:34 with a complicated submission that as yet does not have a name. But the way they're pushing it, because Vic said it again, I wouldn't be surprised if they call it the Diamond in the Rust. That would make me sad, but whatever. On this stuff, Tom.
And not lost on me that just last week you called him a diamond in the rough. And now they're moving on the diamond in the rust thing.
There they go.
Yep. Only thing on that is just that I'm glad the act is already consistently being featured. There's clearly a major upside, both managerially and with the talent in the ring. So it was good to see that again. Swerve and Atlas. Did I missed something where Swerve actually did something heelish in the match that got him the win, because Atlas seemed really pissed off after the bell.
I believe that he was selling the fact that he was pissed off at Swerve's attitude, that he feels like he doesn't know him anymore.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to take of it, because he did not win it in, he didn't win it in a heelish fashion. What were they doing? There was some setup. And they said that's where he really started putting this away. And I don't know if the spot wasn't what it was supposed to be. Oh, I'd have to even look to see what it was.
Yeah. And that murkiness is where I'm questioning it, because I agree. I don't know what you do with Swerve at this point, despite his massive upside that we all agree on.
The rear headbutt is what he was pissed off about.
Okay, because he was holding the back of his head and he was saying, you know what you did. So, all right. I mean, whatever. I guess that's a little detail. Apart from that, I didn't feel that that Swerve really did anything that justifies the new characterization, although I'm not disagreeing with the new characterization. I think it's funny that just last week I was saying, you know, this is such an abrupt character change for Swerve, and I don't really like that. Of course, this week, he's even more done up and he's got more colors in his hair. So maybe that was the first baby step last week. Coincidentally, I'm just guessing coincidentally, there's nothing going on that I think would pertain to, but coincidentally the colors in his hair are the colors of the bisexual pride flag. And those were also the colors that Rhea Ripley was wearing on her eyeshadow. So I just a little thing that I noticed. But the other thing here is that it's really difficult to discern where Atlas is valued at. He's on TV every single week. He's putting on good matches because Jake Atlas doesn't really know how to do otherwise. That sounded weird. I meant he doesn't know how to put on a bad match. It's a compliment. And he got that one little post-match interview once where the crowd was basically asleep, but they were faking the WrestleMania-level cheering behind him. But it feels like he's just kind of a body that's there for Santos Escobar and Swerve to work off of. And he's not being given much characterization, which I almost arguing about it because like Tyler Rust doesn't have much characterization, but I'm into that act already. and, you know, you go back to Mid-South and you look at some guys that didn't even get promo time and you're just seeing them work matches every other week. And it's like, you know what? I'm into this guy and it's fine. So I don't know. I'm scratching my head over exactly how they want me to feel about Jake Atlas.
Atlas Swerve, Rust Daivari, Nate.
Yeah, so I'll just kind of touch on Atlas and Swerve real quick because I kind of have a lot of the same thoughts as you guys here with Atlas, especially like with what Tom was just saying. I'm kind of right there. I don't really know how I'm supposed to feel about him. He doesn't really have an overly defined gimmick. He just kind of does feel like he's somebody there to for everybody to play off of. I don't feel like he's really got like a shot at a title or anything like that. Every once in a while they'll throw him, you know, a bone and kind of, you know, they'll make him look sympathetic, make him look like he's going to be an underdog. And I think they might've even given him a couple like, you know, high profile wins if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, he's kind of just in this weird spot right now. I like the kid. I think he's a talent. But just, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to think at the moment. Cause you know, I feel like, you know, we are going to probably see a rubber match show, especially after, both of them are 1-1 right now. You know, one win, one loss. So you probably will see a third match at least, whether it be New Year's Evil next week, who knows? I don't know if it's going to be, you know, a high profile enough match to be on New Year's Evil, but yeah, so, you know, I'm okay with it. The match itself was good. So there's part of me that wants to see him still babyface. I feel like, you know, we've talked about this past few weeks, you know, he feels more like a natural babyface, but how many times have I said, and you guys have just said it yourselves, but I can remember, you know, all of us saying this in the past too, like, what do you do with Swerve from here? He, you know, kind of started to get, he was, you know, working for the Cruiserweight title. The North American title scene seems crowded, like you guys talking about. So not really sure where he would slot in there. So yeah, you know, turn him heel. It makes sense, especially, you know, him kind of fighting for a title, not being able to get it and turning bitter. And I mean, it makes sense. And I've so far, I mean, I wouldn't say he's pulled it off great yet, but it's only been a couple weeks, so I'll wait before I pass any judgment on it. I said I was going to be quick on that, and I ended up going a lot longer than I expected, but hey, it's me. Bivens and Rust, I don't have much to say about this other than I'm optimistic, I'm hopeful about it. Yeah, I know Kelly it was last week or the week before when he showed up, you know, we were talking a little bit about it off air and I mean, Kelly was super excited about it being, you know, he kind of popped up in New Japan and things here and there. So, going, you know, with all the hype that I've had from Kelly and a couple of my other friends too, on, a little Facebook group I've got, of wrestling fans that I know, people are high on him. So, I haven't gone back and watched really any of his stuff or anything yet, but at least what I've seen, I'm impressed with. It seems like they clearly have something for him, and I feel like Bivens is a great match for him. You know, with India's share potentially going to NXT India, if that's going to be a thing, at least from what I'm, you know, at least what I'm hearing, you know, that kind of leaves Bivens without anybody to manage. This seems like a good spot for him. He's certainly got the chops for it. So I'm glad to see it. Happy to see it. And I think it could work out pretty well. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be like Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman, or, you know, even Heyman, Roman Reigns or anything like that. But I don't know. It so far, at least the vibes that I'm getting tonight, I like it. And I'm optimistic about it. So fingers crossed it goes somewhere good.
Christmas with the Garganos. We've got Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae, Austin Hartwell all hanging out at the Gargano household in front of the Christmas tree with some festive lights and festive holiday wear. And Johnny giving everybody presents. This does not sound like a heel act. On paper, it does not at all. And at times didn't come off as one, but whatever. This faction called The Way. The first segment of the three was Gargano giving a gift to Austin Theory. It was protein powder, and Theory was very happy about it. The best bit there was Johnny Gargano was the cameraman of this with a handheld camcorder, and he said, "The love of my life," as he was focusing in on his North American championship, and then he quickly moved the camera to Candice LeRae. The second segment was for Indy. He gave her a PS5. She said, the box is kind of light. He goes, "Oh, that's actually my PS5. I did that for dramatic effect. Your gift is that we are bestowing upon you the family name. You are now Indy Wrestling." And she was very excited about that. The third one, he gave a wheel to Candice LeRae. This was the smashed wheel from the tank that Candice LeRae trashed. He said he spent 17 hours at a landfill looking for it. I found it actually kind of surprising. They were able to do a gag with a wheel and actually make it work perfectly in context when they are way more famous for working in things, whether they fit or not. And usually they don't. So, very interested to hear thoughts on this, Tom.
The humor was hit and miss, but probably more hit. I guess I wasn't looking into it too much the week or two ago when I noticed the look on Candace's face when Johnny was talking about how something like all he ever needs in life is this North American title. Because, yeah, like you pointed out, they did the love of my life thing while he was zooming in on the title belt. But the my two favorite things here were that they had their portraits printed on their Christmas stockings, and Indy's portrait has her wearing the neck brace. And then this whole, like, Austin Theory making bad cracks and Johnny Gargano rolling his eyes at it thing has not been working for me, but I really liked when Austin Theory said that he would play the PlayStation 5 all day, which is his catchphrase, and Johnny Gargano holding the camera was just like, "Stop getting your stuff in, man." That was definitely the highlight of this for me. I thought it was very funny. I mean, they're being smarmy, but they're also being super entertaining, and that's sort of been the story of all of these Gargano at-home segments since they've started doing them. It's a question of how effective is it really? And ultimately, I've been in favor of them because I feel like Johnny and Candice, for her part, have been doing a fine job of coming off enough like jerks that we don't want to change the channel when we watch them because they are entertaining, but we still want to see them lose their matches. And I'm sure they can get that back very, very easily in this Leon Ruff segment next week. But this was just thoroughly amusing and didn't really make me want to see them get beat up.
Christmas with the Garganos, Nate.
I loved everything about this. This is my type of humor. I like everything about from the opening segment where he's wearing that stupid but awesome suit, you know, and he's sitting there playing the piano and he's like, "You guys have heard of Elf on a Shelf? Well, this is Gargano on a piano." I was hooked. I couldn't wait to see what other crazy, stupid puns they were going to be bringing in here. Indie wrestling, the Gargano whey protein. All of it was so dumb, but it was great. So entertaining. The Indy Hartwell neck brace stocking also got me. I thought I saw that and I wouldn't say I was dying laughing, but I very loudly snorted through my nose. Yeah, the whole segment, or all three segments, I really liked. I also did pick up on him saying "love my life," zooming into the title. You know, so there's just these little things like that that are they're like, I feel like they're kind of planting seeds. And I don't know if in this particular story they've kind of been doing that. And I'm talking all the way back to that Women's Battle Royal about 6-7 months ago when Hartwell started to like help out Candice LeRae, and then they pointed it out like 2 months later or whatever, where they've been kind of just planting seeds this whole time. You know, I think it was Kelly who said that, you know, they're sometimes they'll do a gag and they're not really good at, you know, bringing it back and making it funny, but they, you know, they were able to do that. I feel like Gargano and LeRae have a lot of input in this. I mean, and I'm going, this is just speculation. I have no proof or anything to back it up, but I just feel like they have a lot of input in this particular story. It would make sense considering, you know, how long they've been in, you know, the promotion, the you know, kind of the position on the card and everything. But like, you know, the promos themselves, while they seem bullet pointed, I don't feel like they, at least to me, Gargano anyway, doesn't feel overly scripted. But I feel like they kind of have some wiggle room here to kind of make things work and take the jokes and the puns and things and, you know, kind of rework them. That might, maybe that's why it seems a little bit, a little bit different than some of the other segments, some of the other comedic segments to me. Just, you know, I get this strong feeling that they've got a lot of creative input there.
All right, get your pens out, guys, because I'm going to roll some segments together. There really aren't that many left. Okay. Opening match was Killian Dane and Drake Maverick against Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan in a street fight. Why a street fight? I don't know. I guess this match kind of deserves one, or this feud, this little thing that's going on with them. Burch and Lorcan do go over. They isolate Maverick after laying out Dane, meaning to break him through two tables, but he kind of slides across him, and somehow a guy his size doesn't break through him. He just bends them both in half, sort of, and then falls sort of awkwardly behind them. And Burch and Lorcan hit their finisher and defeat Drake Maverick in 15:35. I don't know that we'll get anything more out of this feud, but we did need to see this match because of what these bad guys did to Killian Dane. The one other match was Bronson Reed going over Ashante the Adonis in 107. It looked like they were doing a tag thing with Adonis and Swerve. Instead, Swerve's going heel and Adonis is going enhancement again. Reed over Adonis in 107. We also got Xia Li and Boa. They are super toughening up now. They're looking like they are ready to fight now. And we also have Damian Priest and Karrion Kross. They don't like each other. So, Tom.
Nothing on Damian and Karrion. That was very straightforward. Damian will be a speed bump before he goes up to the main roster through the Royal Rumble. Let's see. Xia and Boa. I'm glad that we got a segment of these that finally shows some actual story development. I was worried that we weren't going to get them actually toughening up at the end of this. I thought it was just going to constantly be them getting beaten down and then showing that they have toughened up would happen in the ring. One thing that I've said before about these videos, one upside to them is that this footage can be used in the context of, like, you know, coming up after the commercial break, Xia Li and Boa, and they can show stuff like this. And now they can show footage of them being badasses rather than just getting the snot beat out of them. So I suppose that's good. Yay, Bronson Reed, I guess. I have nothing negative to say about him, but I didn't really come away with any takeaways regarding him. On the other side of the ring, yeah, it's disappointing that Ashante the Adonis is back to being the squashy, because I really thought my little talking point about him was that he instantly, when they attached him to Swerve, he instantly felt like the most contemporary thing on the whole show. And I was really looking forward to seeing what he was going to do. And then he disappeared. I mean, you know, 205 Live anonymity. And now just back to this. So, you know, his story's not over. But this darn opening tag, NXT just barfs out the announcement on, you know, during commercials on Monday Night Raw. Killian Dane and Drake Maverick are one of the most compelling acts on NXT TV, and we know that they're angling back toward the tag championships. I feel like that story has actually been pretty decently woven over the past couple weeks, and even going back to before McAfee's crew put out Dane. And then, you know, it just crashes right onto TV. It's abruptly announced. It abruptly commences. Even if you can process it enough to enjoy it, there's no time given to allow us to actually care about what's happening. So it's just really disappointing to see it thrown out like that. It's just like, look at this crazy stuff. Don't you want to tune into NXT and watch us instead of something else? And it's just, it takes something that was compelling and removes what was compelling about it. And yeah, I will be pleasantly surprised if this is not the end of Dane and Maverick's title contention, because this, even though it didn't need to be a street fight, it still felt definitive. They just could have gotten so much more out of it. And again, I'll be pleasantly surprised. Maybe they will still get something out of it. Fingers crossed. But, you know, you've got grizzled young veterans breathing right down their necks. I did, as just two stupid little details, Barrett has done this twice now, and I think it's so stupid that when a table spot goes awry and the person does not go through the table, he says, oh, we reinforce the tables here in NXT. And I'm just like, all right, don't call that much attention to it. You know, this isn't like, oh, he didn't get all of it, which has its own problems.
Think they're different. For me, he's just totally joking about what went awry.
Yes, that is a good point. I meant to frame it that way as well. So I'm glad you mentioned that. It is clearly a joke, but it's just, I don't feel like it's the place for it. It's akin to JBL referring to weapons as toys, I think. I will say that I got a real good laugh out of Barrett pulling a Harley R. Paget and calling them Lurch and Borkin. So that was fun to remember as a thing that once happened on PWT Talks NXT.
I didn't catch it, and I always listen for it ever since the time Harley did that. It still makes me laugh when I think about Lurch and Borkin.
It was, yes, I cackled. It was right at the end. The bell had probably already sounded, but yep, he called him Lurch and Borkin.
Oh, I didn't hear that either.
Wonderful.
That's great.
Take it away, Nate.
So, yeah, let's see real quick. Priest and Cross, I really don't. Yeah, that was pretty straightforward. I don't have really anything to say about that either. Lee and Boa, again, I think I've been a little bit higher on this whole thing than most people. But I really liked what we saw here tonight, kind of, you know, them finally getting a spot to shine, them not getting the snot kicked out of them. I'm still intrigued by this. It's got me hooked. I'm wondering where it's going to go. I'm hoping we finally actually get an answer to what's been going on, with them for the past handful of months here. Sooner rather than later, we get that answer. Reed and Adonis, again, not a whole heck of a lot to say. I'm glad to see Reed in this, kind of in this spot. It feels like he kind of keeps getting a push and a stop and start push. I don't know if it's, COVID related or what. I feel like there's been a couple times now where, they've really started to kind of give him a push, some squash matches, and then we just kind of never hear from him. So hopefully they keep going with it. I like the kid. So we'll go from there and see what happens. And yeah, Adonis, when there were those couple series of, I think it was like either one or two backstage interviews and then maybe one or two in-ring matches on NXT TV that he had with that kind of new, very, very colorful gimmick that he had. Apparently he was on 205 Live. I don't really pay attention to 205 Live. Then he just kind of disappeared. You're now back to, doing enhancement stuff, which is fine, I guess. But I was intrigued by that, and I thought it was going to be something. I wouldn't say it was going to be, the next big thing for NXT, but at least something fun and interesting and different. So kind of a little disappointing there, but, is what it is. It doesn't mean we'll never see it again or never see him in a high profile spot again. But everybody's got a spot on the card. The tag team opener. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add after what you guys said either. I think I would like to keep, see at least Drake and Maverick get, Dane and Maverick get, at least maybe one more shot, but that's probably wishful thinking. Cause this kind of, when you have a street fight, kind of does feel like it is a definitive end to a feud. So I don't know. I kind of feel like this is probably the end for that, at least for right now, especially with the grizzled young vets right around the corner. You know, the kind of the pomp, we had some pomp and circumstance with them coming back a couple few weeks ago. And you know, they were really getting heated up going in, you know, kind of pre-pandemic. So I think it's kind of time for grizzled young vets to get their shot finally. I'm looking forward to that. I think they're deserving the spot, and I think it kind of freshen up the tag team division a little bit, which admittedly has kind of felt a little bit stale. You know, right now I think it's picked up a little bit, you know, with Lurch and Borkin, you know, in their prime spot.
You're going to start doing it accidentally if you try to do it too many times as a joke.
I've done
that to myself before.
I started doing it accidentally and rolled with it. So you thought it was a joke. I did. I'm actually okay with that. It's felt a little bit fresher, you know, the past handful of weeks here, but it kind of has been stale for a while. I mean, there was a time, you know, when Breezango were the champions, we were talking about how there's really, other than Breezango and Undisputed Era, there really wasn't another established tag team. It was just always kind of a bunch of thrown together guys. Birch. Wow, yeah, there we go. I'm doing it. Birch. That was right. Birch and Lorcan. Oh God. God, what
you
have
you
guys
were right,
done
but
today?
You didn't know it.
This is bad. This is bad. And this, yep. All right. Well, we'll see what happens next week. But we also had them kicking around too. Anyway, everything kind of seems fresh. Looking forward to it. I'm going to shut up before I say it again.
Emails. That we got a few more left. These two not necessarily related, but they are. They feel like they can easily be rolled together and answered as one. This is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you all. Despite the challenges the pandemic has presented us with, I hope you're able to celebrate in whatever way works for your families. Now that everyone seems healthy and ready to roll, I dare say we are now back to embarrassment of riches mode. With the next championship match already booked for New Year's Eve, how do you see the next couple months after that event playing out? Is Cross the heir apparent? Could a curveball be in the mix? Has the deck been reshuffled? Also, I'm super stoked that Mercedes is back, and I can't wait to see her mix it up in the coming weeks. Be well. Stay safe. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. And this is from Jack Argyle. Hey, guys. Got some questions for you tonight regarding NXT involvement in the Royal Rumble. I know back at Survivor Series, the word going around was that the reason NXT wasn't involved was because they didn't want rosters mingling with the COVID situation, which is fair enough. I wanted to see if you guys knew about the differences at Tropicana Field to Amway. Isn't it a much bigger space where they may be able to get some amount of fans, or am I wrong in suggesting that? I thought they'd picked it as an ideal place for the bigger space so NXT talent wouldn't be mixing with the main roster only for a short period of time in the ring. If you guys were to choose a few talents to get a shine in the Rumble this year, who would you choose and why? I would go for Priest, and maybe he stays on the main roster permanently, or for him to get a spot eliminating three or four guys ready for whenever he eventually does move up, so he's got an impressive showing under his belt. For the women, I think the obvious choice is Rhea, and I'm sure for the women in NXT, at least three or four will get a spot in the Rumble. I think out of all the women in NXT, I'd be going for Candice or Raquel. Raquel is the monster in the women's Rumble that everybody tries to eliminate, will work well and showcase her to a bigger audience. What do you guys think? Just wanted to add a thank you for you guys for the podcast this year. Really helped me since the pandemic has begun. Look forward to the show every week and all of your insights. It's been a tough year, but I'm hoping next year can't be much worse than the year we've just had. And as for the wrestling, here's hoping NXT produces some great shows for the next year. Look forward to tuning in to next year for this great show. Cheers, guys. Stay safe. And Merry Christmas to you all. Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. To answer Catani's question, I think in the coming year I think it's going to be Cross again. The mitigating factor here is that Balor's championship run, which is based on necessity, has just been so effective. He was champion the first time at a time when NXT wasn't all that hot. It was a kind of a lull. Like it seemed like what he was doing was fine. It wasn't at a time when there was a lot of sizzle. And I feel like people look at every NXT era pretty fondly, but it was kind of a lull. And now he's champion at a more interesting time, roster wise, and he's doing so much more interesting things, character wise, and his matches have just been on another level, which is pretty wild since he's wrestled the same match kind of a lot of times. So I feel like the plan is for Cross to win that championship and get the run that he never got. But I wouldn't be saddened if they took their time getting there. I hope that they take their time getting there. As for the Rumble question, yes, I think Priest is the obvious choice. I think that this match with Cross is, yes, designed to get Cross back over and move him up the card in a fast way. It's also a loss that Priest can absorb, assuming that he is going to the Rumble, as I assume that he is. Although, I will say, Tom and I have been asked this question every year that this podcast has existed, and we have historically done pretty poorly when we predict what's going to happen at the Royal Rumble. I also think Raquel makes a ton of sense, but with her, it's going to be about timing, because you don't want her on Raw and SmackDown before you feel like she's ready for another level of exposure. And I don't know that I would do that right now. You got Mercedes Martinez, but if she begged herself back to NXT, that's probably not the obvious thing to do. And you've got Toni Storm, who seems like she's going to be more at home on the main roster than she is at NXT. And she's fine in NXT, but I feel like her act will be even better, colorful and loud as it is, on Raw and SmackDown. So maybe that's somebody who could show up in the Rumble. But it seems like right now she's kind of in the mix, so I'm not sure that would happen right away, Tom.
So Royal Rumble predictions, along with predicting that both Carmella and Baron Corbin would win the Money in the Bank that year that they did that, predicting that Casey Catanzaro would be in the first
the Kofi
Royal
spot,
Rumble.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Those are like two of my proudest predictions that I got right. What have we been wrong about? Because of course we enthusiastically picked Shayna.
We've talked
last year
about people.
Went.
To get the diesel push. Like I know that this is me airing out my own grievances right here.
Okay.
because I'm very, very good at predicting what will happen at the Royal Rumble, and I'm good at predicting NXT, but I'm not good at predicting those two things together. I know that I advocated for Dominik Dijakovic to have a big, big Rumble debut. I thought that was a great way to move him up, and they could not have moved him up in a much different way than that.
Yeah, and I also I'm pretty sure we were doing. Yeah, it must have been. Yeah, it had to have lined up because I also picked Asuka and Shinsuke the year that both of them won. Although admittedly, those were pretty easy picks. I think a lot of people had those telegraphed from pretty far out, which is why they don't quite join the echelon of predicting that Carmella and Baron Corbin would win Money in the Bank on the same night. So I actually completely echo all of your thoughts. So I will just leave that at that. I also spoke more about what I would say here about the women's division. I said all of that earlier in the show. So I'll just say about the Trop. Yeah, I was surprised, if not entirely disappointed, just kind of surprised that they did not try to mix up the Thunderdome environment a little bit more. I mean, you know, of course I understand that, you know, even when they're touring, Raw and SmackDown always has the same look, you know, just fitted to different arenas and it doesn't really change up all that much. But I thought this was an opportunity, not that, you know, super COVID aware me would have been in favor of it, but I thought this was, thinking in WWE's, you know, through their line of thinking, an opportunity to create a Thunderdome that also had space for fans in a larger area that, you know, because the Thunderdome doesn't take up the full Trop. There's still more space. There's outfield. The ceiling, I imagine, doesn't even go, you know, all the way up to the top of the dome. It can't from the look of it. And the dome, I believe, I guess I'd need more of a baseball expert to tell me about this, but I believe that that dome, it doesn't retract, but the panels open up to air out. So it's not an air, but it is a much more aerated space. So I really thought that they were going to try to incorporate factoring in a fan presence more, or at least do something with it beyond just making it look like they transported the Amway Center to St. Petersburg. So that was a bit of a surprise, but I think that they need the NXT roster in these rumbles, especially as the women's rumble by necessity. So I really don't see them using COVID protocols as a reason not to do that. And if another major issue crops up on any roster, unfortunately, I still don't see the company that WWE is letting that get in their way.
Go ahead, Nate.
So, yeah, I guess starting with the Royal Rumble, I agree. I kind of don't agree. Or I don't think that they would use COVID as a reason. They try not to use COVID as a reason as much as possible, I think. They'll tell you otherwise, but, actions speak louder than words. I think Damian Priest is obviously somebody that we've talked about. I think he's probably an obvious choice for it. Thinking about it too, I'm kind of wondering if maybe we'll see a token Bronson Reed appearance or something. There always seems to be last year there was Keith Lee, kind of the token strongman. Obviously they wanted to try and give Keith Lee a bit of a push. Unfortunately, that push didn't really work out, which is super unfortunate. But, this is just something I'm thinking about is, maybe just because Bronson Reed kind of got repackaged, well, not repackaged, but at least re-debuted again tonight. But that'd be kind of something I'd be for, kind of seeing him get a little bit of a spot, a little bit of a big man spot. If they want to roll with him, as kind of like a mid-card, powerhouse, if you will. For the women, Raquel is certainly somebody that I think makes sense, although doesn't necessarily make sense considering the feud that she's in currently. Granted, that could all change come New Year's Evil. So I guess we'll kind of see what happens with that, but I think she could have an awesome, an awesome spot there in the Rumble. I'm also, Casey Catanzaro is somebody that crossed my mind when I read this email a little bit earlier because of the Kofi spot that she had. Was it last year? I think it was last year, the year before, whenever it was. But she's definitely somebody. Okay. So it was, okay. It was bad the last couple of years. But she was somebody that crossed my mind, especially where she has been on TV relatively recently. It's been a few weeks now, but she was in that that storyline with Caden Carter for a little while there. So I can certainly see that happening. Okay, that was one email. Now I totally forget what the other one was. It was Kevin's email, and I think we covered most of that anyway. So I'll just say, hey, Kevin, and we'll move on.
We have one more email, and this is from new emailer Hitane Dave. Hey, guys, I've been a fan of yours for a few months now, usually listening to this podcast after the AEW livecast. Something Tom Staupe said on the Raw livecast two nights ago caught my attention. AEW is indie wrestling with a budget. I'm curious if you could elaborate on that. What did you see and what did you not enjoy watching? I admit that as a lifelong WWE fan, it took me a while to get used to AEW, and I'm still sometimes struck by particular production peeves and their overuse of tongue-in-cheek wrestling is fake anyway humor. But I want to hear Tom Staupe's and the other co-host's full critique so I can understand what it might take for AEW to get that second million. P.S. I am also an avid D&D dungeon master, and I always get a kick out of you plugging your TTRPG plugs. I hope we can get a chance to talk some D&D sometime as well. Best, Hitane Dave, PhD candidate. One more PhD on the show. I love it. Let's get there. I didn't hear what exactly Tom was saying about it, but we have talked AEW a little bit. I won't have a ton to add here because I have jumped in and out on AEW every now and then, but have not jumped in for a while. I do also tire real quickly of meta wrestling is fake anyway tropes. I think there's a real fine line there between what is funny and what is not. It gets to a point where if the characters don't believe in it, why should I? That does happen to me. My other issues with it are every time I've jumped in, there's been a lot of great tag team wrestling, but it has not seemed like it was working toward anything. I have missed some of the really, really big things they've done with the tag team division, but it seems like every match I've seen, every single match I saw was good. Every tag team match I saw was good. Some of them were so dangerous, they were almost tough to enjoy, but they were still good. My issues have been entirely feeling like it maybe wasn't leaning toward anything. Anyway, with that out of the way, I will say that I probably will try AEW again, and it'll probably be soon, maybe after this whole season is over and done with, because I've been way busier than I care to admit. Tom, this was pointed directly at you, so let them know what you think.
And I was certainly asking for it by using that exact phrasing, although, you know, indie wrestling could use a budget. I think, you know, she's getting those nice braids put in her hair, and, you know, the way is really going to need, I don't know.
Oh, this guy.
Could we bedazzle her neck brace?
She already did that herself.
Did she? How did I miss that?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
But yeah, I had to get that stupid joke in there. But no, I was definitely asking for this by using that phrasing. And you know what? It was spoken in the context of having enjoyed AEW much more recently. I started watching them again with the Go Home show for Winter is Coming, which I actually thought was a really good show. And the stuff that they've been doing since Winter is Coming, it's not all to my liking, but it feels important. And I am very optimistic about this whole thing that they're doing with Omega going to different brands, obviously, particularly Impact, but also AAA. And I'm wondering if others are going to be involved there. I'm very intrigued by the different facets of that. And it has made AEW, I was already, if not watching it week to week, paying attention to it through Wade's post shows. But now it feels like it's that much more of like, okay, I can't miss a week now because it feels like it's an important show. So it's at least in that context, but this is absolutely a phrase that I have used to describe it before. And I mean, there's a number of reasons, and Kelly, you touched on several of them. I think, you know, and I've said this kind of stuff before. Let me see if I can wrap it up nicely. I don't know how well I'll do here. You know, and I have nothing against indie wrestling. I think that's inferred by the statement, but I don't have anything against indie wrestling in this sense. I think that AEW presents a lot of wrestling that is just action for action's sake, and a lot of it is spot festy. A lot of it goes on for much longer than it needs to just for the sake of it. And I am not the kind of fan that particularly appeals to. I want more of a narrative and more characterization. And obviously they have some of that going on, but it feels like the majority of their show is just action for action's sake. And yes, there is a jokiness about a lot of it as well. And you get that on the indie scene, but that's more acceptable because even though a lot of indie promotions do have narratives that run from show to show, so if you're a regular fan of them, you can keep going and get a continuing story. But for the most part, they're just booking whatever are the most exciting matches that they can put together with the wrestlers available to them on the budget that they have to get people in their parking lot or in their armory or whatever it is, and give them enough action that they're going to be satiated. Finding that line between being satiated and hungering to come back. And I think that AEW has long come off as action for action's sake and, you know, with the budget they do stack, you know, you're going to get that little postcard handout. You're going to see on the poster like, ooh, look at these WWE cast-offs that we were able to get. We can put their face on the poster. There's a recognizable star from the past that we can sell the show on. So there's that vibe as well. Primarily, the thing that I would hone in on here is the actual detriment of this, because thinking objectively, even though I'm not the fan that a lot of this has, you know, appeals to, there obviously are a lot of fans that this is the sort of wrestling that they want to see. But there is a balance between the oppressiveness of WWE's control that they impose upon the wrestlers and the freedom that AEW allows. You know, there is a middle ground that needs to be found desperately, and maybe they found that, because again, I've been praising the show much more lately. But you look at stuff that culminates with Matt Hardy taking that horrible, horrible bump that Matt Hardy should not be doing at this stage in his career. The whole Broken Matt character, a major, major part of that character was to keep him from doing stuff like that, so he wouldn't have to do stuff like that anymore. And now here he is taking that bump and risking a serious, serious brain injury because of it, because he's got the freedom to just go ahead and do it. And there's nobody checking him because the wrestlers have that freedom, and there absolutely needs to be a middle ground there for multiple reasons, but that reason in particular. You know, if I want to, just so I know after all of this, you know, once we're done recording, that I don't think, oh, I should have added that as well. Maybe it's better that I didn't. I will just add in the final point that I think with a lot of the talent on the roster, and yes, of course, there is a lot of genuine talent on the roster, these are also a lot of people that WWE passed over for reasons. I that sounds like such a huge diss. This is a roster that includes people like MJF, Sammy Guevara, Scorpio Sky, people that I admired and followed and covered on like indie promotion Wrestle Circus or Court Bowers MLW. And they absolutely deserve the contracts that they got. And some of them like a Scorpio Sky deserve much more TV time than they regularly get. But then you look at people like Luchasaurus or Orange Cassidy, and hey, again, like I was saying about action for action's sake, in the indie context, I loved Orange Cassidy. I thought that act was, he understood it, and I thought it was very fun, but not something I would want to see on a higher level. And here he is doing it on a higher level on a consistent basis. And you just look at some of the fundamentals with someone like, you know, Luchasaurus, and it's just, it's not there. It's a learn on the job kind of thing. And I don't know, maybe I'm talking out of my ass a little bit with that, because I don't know what Luchasaurus's training is. But I think there's a lot of...
Well, he trained in NXT.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I know who this... Who is
Yeah. He? You do. His name... Actually, you may or may not know who he is. His name is Austin Mattelson. What was his name? He wore like a top hat. I don't remember if he made TV... he was on Big Brother a few years ago too, and
oh, that's how you
really, know. Really good at it. I'll try to see, oh gosh, it was, there was some religious aspect to his name. I want to say, I'll find
okay.
it. I don't remember what it was, but NXT is where he was initially trained.
That's funny. That is news to me. I was just trying to pick somebody who overtly has a goofy thing wearing a dinosaur mask down to the ring. But with him and with a lot of other people, you just see like a lack of fundamentals that it shows that the making the wrestling actually abide by rules and make it look like it's an actual contest is not a priority to these guys. It's very much Cirque du Soleil. I don't want to, I'm trying not to hone in on too many specifics here, but they're like, just running the ropes, like Irish whips or whips into the turnbuckle or whatever. And they barely get shoved at all. They just go and run into the ropes, 'cause that's what I'm supposed to do right now. And you see that all across all of these matches. And just for the one final tiny little thing, a major, major problem on the indies is a lack of female wrestling. And I've spoken with a couple of indie promoters about this, and they claim that it's because the female talent just isn't out there as much as the male talent is. And I'm not a promoter, so I can't relate to those exact issues. It's not what I see from, you know, what I peruse online and social media and whatnot. It seems like it's out there and it's hungry, and there's a lot of talent, but I'm not actually in that trying to promote that show. So that's not, I don't know, but you see this major show and if not bury, they just do not feature their women's division in an important way. It feels like they feel like they have to put it there, or else they just won't seem like they're, it feels like lip service that they even have a women's championship and they just throw them on in the 9:30 slot every single week, give them a couple minutes just so people don't complain even more than they already are.
Judas Devlin was the name that he used in NXT.
Huh.
Not sure if you saw him or not.
Wow.
Yeah, he was there from 12 to 14, took a really bad hip injury in 14, and he was released a while after that. I see here his debut was teaming with Corey Graves against Briley Pierce and CJ Parker. Briley Pierce, a frequent punching bag of mine on NXT 8 years back, although he has been released 8 years back. So now we can't talk about him anymore. And Luchasaurus, also one of the guys who was at the forefront of fighting Bill DeMott during the Bill DeMott scandal. So,
Wow. Yeah, no, I didn't realize that at all.
Yep.
And, you know, I've spoken enough on this, but you know, that is, an enjoyable PS about, being a dungeon master. That's pretty cool. I Kelly and Nate are much more involved in that sort of thing than I am, but I do have a Dungeons and Dragons group that meets weekly, and we've been doing it for 3.5 to 4 years. I don't think I've mentioned that on the podcast before, but Kelly and Nate know about it. And only one of our characters has died in that whole time. We're still kicking. Just last week, we did a fun, sort of like flashback session where it's still taking place in the same world, but it's centuries in the past, establishing events that are now having ripple effects on our main campaign. And we broke the game on purpose so we could have godlike characters, and we made them all level 25. And that was a really, really fun combat heavy session with our wacky characters that could just like basically do it. Like I even if the DM had tried, I don't think he could have killed me.
Yeah, I have not played a lot of D&D in my life specifically, but massive into board games, tabletop gaming, and all kinds of stuff like that. Tom, when you were talking about all the stuff about the happy medium between the oppressive environment of WWE and the inmates running the asylum in AEW, it just makes me think of the film industry, because it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
An oppressive director can really shut down. Sometimes they can create beauty. Sometimes they can create really good things. Hitchcock was an extremely controlling director, made a lot of classics. But sometimes you cast Benicio del Toro and he's a weirdo. And if you saw what he was doing when he was creating the character of Fenster in The Usual Suspects, you'd be like, what the hell are you doing? But if you just let him go, now you have lines. Okay. Everybody's seen it, so it doesn't matter. But what about the hooker with the dysentery? Anyway, you gotta let weirdos be weirdos.
Yeah, you look at Kubrick, extremely controlling to the point of driving actors away, and also extremely manipulative to making actors feel like they were his best friend, and then dropping them as soon as the movie was over with. But then you also look at somebody like Michael Bay, who is extremely controlling on his sets. I almost admire the way that Michael Bay makes his movies, because he has such a knuckle on every single little detail of what's happening, and he knows how he wants it done, and he gets it done that way. But I say almost because we've seen the end result.
Because those aren't good. Yes. he is committed to sub mediocrity. Nate, I was
speaking of sub mediocrity. Oh man, I walked into that one.
Oh, here we go.
God,
60 minutes and 30 seconds of wrestling on this show. Did you have anything else? Yes, I'm just shoehorning that in because I realized I forgot.
So really, as far as that email goes, everything that Tom kind of outlined with AEW, or I'm kind of going to echo that. Part of the reason that I haven't gotten into AEW either, I guess, is really just time. The emailer also brought up, my other project doing the therapeutic tabletop gaming, and that takes up a lot of my time right now. Editing the YouTube show and everything. So it's like I've kind of been paying attention to mostly NXT, WWE, because that's what I know. I really enjoy the history of the product as well. So it's like, I like knowing title lineages and things like that. And I know obviously AEW, it's now building its history. But I think that's part of the reason I have trouble latching onto it, is because there isn't that history there for me to like latch onto and learn, as well as a lot of the other things that Tom mentioned. I won't keep harping on too much about it, because eventually I want to catch up with AEW. Once a few things in my life start to calm down, I want to catch up with AEW. I'm paying for a New Japan subscription, and I'm only watching a handful of things a month. So I want to catch up and start watching some New Japan. I'm going to have some more free time on my hands coming up soon. So
you better catch up, because the January 4th show is just around the corner, and that is WrestleMania. So
that's true. That's true. So Wrestle Kingdom. I'm looking forward to that. But since you did bring up the tabletop gaming stuff, if you did want to check out everything that we do with tabletop gaming, therapeutic benefits, and all of that stuff, Deej Time, DEGETIME on YouTube. We're playing a game called Project By Modus right now. Tom is a part of it. And we're in the middle of shooting our season two. We're coming up to the end of season one. We're in the middle of shooting season two. There's a Discord link in any one of our YouTube descriptions, rather. So if you wanted to join a community of a whole bunch of people that love to play role-playing games, click on the Discord. Join us. Say hey. Come hang out.
All right. Well, with that, that is our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. If you haven't gotten enough tabletop stuff, check me out on Instagram and find me there. I take pictures of video games, of tabletop games, and I don't take very good pictures. So whatever, I do what I can, and I show people happy that they are winning. That is my feed. Tom, who are you?
I was going to say, I think they're pretty good pictures, because you always look miffed because you lost to one of your younger daughters, and they look very, very satisfied in the background.
I win 70% of the games we play, but I never think to take pictures, and it's always funnier to have them gloating over me.
Right. So I am at Tom Staup on Twitter. Yes, check out BioModus. Also, please check out NXT 8 Years Back by going VIP. We are having a lot of fun with that show, and I think it's a lot of fun to listen to as well. We even, I think, made some chicken salad out of a recap show when we recorded it earlier today. That drops on Saturday, of course, 8 years to the day that the show we are covering took place, or aired, rather. I had one more little stupid joke that I forgot, but that's probably for the best. Happy holidays, everybody.
Nate, who are you?
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I write the NXT Hits and Misses, which I will be posting at some point tomorrow. Tomorrow's New Year's Eve, so my day is going to be a little screwed up, but at some point I'll get it up there. And like I said, check out my stuff on YouTube, and we'll be back here next week and do it all over again.
Sounds like your entire week is screwed up if your tomorrow is New Year's Eve, because tomorrow is actually Christmas Eve.
But I guess I'm thinking I get New Year's Evil on the brain.
All right, folks, we will see you in 7. Cheers.